Maybe it's been a while since you've seen Disney's Little Mermaid, or maybe you've never seen it. So here's the story as found on the IMDb website, last edited by Alizar. Listen for the family chain of command in the underwater world, and how disobedience causes nearly catastrophic trouble. Many are hurt, especially the father, by the selfishness of the daughter. Ariel, a 16-year-old mermaid princess, is dissatisfied with life under the sea and curious about the human world. With her best fish friend, Flounder, Ariel collects human artifacts and goes to the surface of the ocean to visit Scuttle the seagull, who offers very inaccurate and comical knowledge of human culture. Ignoring the warnings of her father, King Triton, and court musician, Sebastian the crab, that contact between merpeople and humans is forbidden, the sea's primary contact with humans involves fishermen, so King Triton considers humans as nothing more than mere predators, Ariel still longs to be part of the human world. To this end, she has filled a secret grotto with all the human artifacts she has found. Sebastian, who is assigned to watch over Ariel and be sure she does not visit the surface again, tries to convince her that it's better to live under the sea than in the human world. One night, Ariel, Flounder, and an unwilling Sebastian travel to the ocean surface to watch a celebration for the birthday of Prince Eric, with whom Ariel falls in love. A sudden storm hits, during which everyone manages to escape in a lifeboat except for Eric, who goes back to rescue his dog, Max. He almost drowns saving Max, but is saved by Ariel, who drags him to the beach. Although it seems that his heart isn't beating, Ariel notices that Eric is breathing. She sings to him, but dives underwater when Max returns to Eric. Upon waking, Eric has a vague impression that he was rescued by a girl with a beautiful voice. He vows to find her, and Ariel vows to find a way to join Eric. Triton and his daughters notice a change in Ariel, who is openly lovesick. Triton questions Sebastian about Ariel's behavior, during which Sebastian accidentally reveals the incident with Eric. Triton furiously confronts Ariel in her grotto, using his trident to destroy her collection of human treasures. After Triton leaves, a pair of eels, Flotsam and Jetsam, convince a crying Ariel that she must visit Ursula, the sea witch, if she wants all of her dreams to come true. Ursula makes a deal with Ariel to transform her into a human for 3 days. Within these 3 days, Ariel must receive the kiss of true love from Eric. Otherwise, she will transform back into a mermaid on the 3rd day and belong to Ursula. As payment for legs, Ariel has to give up her voice, which Ursula takes by magically removing the energy from Ariel's vocal cords and storing it in a nautilus shell. Ariel's tail is transformed into legs, and Sebastian and Flounder drag her to the surface. Meanwhile, Triton discovers Ariel and Sebastian's disappearance and, racked with guilt over his behavior, orders a search for them. Eric and Max find Ariel on the beach. He initially suspects that she is the one who saved his life, but when he learns that she cannot speak, he discards that notion, to the frustration of both Ariel and Max, who knows the truth. He helps her to the palace, where the servants think she is a survivor of a shipwreck. Ariel spends time with Eric, and at the end of the 2nd day, they almost kiss, but are thwarted by Flotsam and Jetsam. Angered at their narrow escape, Ursula takes the disguise of a beautiful young woman named Vanessa, and appears on shore singing with Ariel's voice. Eric recognizes the song, and in her disguise, Vanessa, aka Ursula, casts a hypnotic enchantment on Eric to make him forget about Ariel. The next day, Ariel finds out that Eric will be married to the disguised Ursula on a ship. She cries and is left behind when the wedding barge departs. Scuttle discovers that Vanessa is Ursula in disguise and informs Ariel. As Ariel and Flounder chase the wedding barge, Sebastian informs Triton, and Scuttle is assigned to literally stall the wedding. With the help of various animals, the nautilus shell around Ursula's neck is broken, restoring Ariel's voice and breaking Ursula's enchantment over Eric. Realizing that Ariel was the girl who saved his life, Eric rushes to kiss her, but the sun sets and Ariel transforms back into a mermaid. Ursula reverts to her true form and kidnaps Ariel. Triton appears and confronts Ursula, but cannot destroy Ursula's contract with Ariel. Triton chooses to sacrifice himself for his daughter and is transformed into a polyp. Ursula takes Triton's crown and trident, which was her plan from the beginning. Ursula uses her new power to gloat, transforming into a giant and forming a whirlpool that disturbs several shipwrecks to the surface, one of which Eric commandeers. Just as Ursula is said to use the trident to destroy Ariel, Eric turns the wheel hard to port and runs Ursula through the abdomen with the ship's splintered bowsprit, mortally wounding her. With her last breaths, Ursula pulls the ship down with her, but Eric escapes to shore in time. With Ursula gone, her power breaks, and the polyps in Ursula's garden, including Triton, turn back into the old merpeople. Later, after seeing that Ariel really loves Eric, and that Eric also saved him in the process, Triton willingly changes her from a mermaid into a human using his trident. She runs to Eric's arms, and the two finally kiss. In the final scene, an unspecified amount of time later, Ariel marries Eric in a wedding where both humans and merpeople attend. This fairy tale story has a happy ending, where good characters are restored and the bad ones are destroyed. Disobedience by Ariel in violation of her father's directions caused a lot of unnecessary pain. There's a Bible story that has some of the same elements of dishonoring the family chain of command, but the ending is radically different. It's found in Joshua 7.
The Lord's command to Israel not to take from Jericho anything that was to be destroyed was not obeyed. A man named Achan disobeyed that order, and so the Lord was furious with the Israelites. Achan was the son of Carmi and grandson of Zabdi, and belonged to the clan of Zerah, a part of the tribe of Judah. Joshua sent some men from Jericho to Ai, a city east of Bethel near Bethaven, with orders to go and explore the land. When they had done so, they reported back to Joshua, "There is no need for everyone to attack Ai. Send only about 2,000 or 3,000 men. Don't send the whole army up there to fight. It is not a large city." So about 3,000 Israelites made the attack, but they were forced to retreat. The men of Ai chased them from the city gate as far as some quarries and killed about 36 of them on the way down the hill. Then the Israelites lost their courage and were afraid. Joshua and the leaders of Israel tore their clothes in grief, threw themselves to the ground before the Lord's covenant box, and lay there till evening, with dust on their heads to show their sorrow. And Joshua said, "Sovereign Lord, why did you bring us across the Jordan at all? To turn us over to the Amorites? To destroy us? Why didn't we just stay on the other side of the Jordan? What can I say, O Lord, now that Israel has retreated from the enemy? The Canaanites and everyone else in the country will hear about it. They will surround us and kill every one of us. And then what will you do to protect your honor?" The Lord said to Joshua, "Get up. Why are you lying on the ground like this? Israel has sinned. They have broken the agreement with me that I ordered them to keep. They have taken some of the things condemned to destruction. They stole them, lied about it, and put them with their own things. This is why the Israelites cannot stand against their enemies. They retreat from them because they themselves have been condemned to destruction. I will not stay with you any longer unless you destroy the things you were ordered not to take. Get up, purify the people, and get them ready to come before me. Tell them to be ready tomorrow, because I, the Lord God of Israel, have this to say. Israel, you have in your possession some things that I ordered you to destroy. You cannot stand against your enemies until you get rid of these things. So tell them that in the morning they will be brought forward, tribe by tribe. The tribe that I pick out will then come forward, clan by clan. The clan that I pick out will come forward, family by family. The family that I pick out will come forward, one by one. The one who is then picked out and found with the condemned goods will be burned, along with his family and everything he owns, for he has brought terrible shame on Israel and has broken my covenant." Early the next morning, Joshua brought Israel forward, tribe by tribe, and the tribe of Judah was picked out. He brought the tribe of Judah forward, clan by clan, and the clan of Zerah was picked out. Then he brought the clan of Zerah forward, family by family, and the family of Zabdi was picked out. He then brought Zabdi's family forward, one by one, and Achan, the son of Carmi and grandson of Zabdi, was picked out. Joshua said to him, "My son, tell the truth here before the Lord, the God of Israel, and confess. Tell me now, what have you done? Don't try to hide it from me." "It's true," Achan answered. "I have sinned against the Lord, Israel's God, and this is what I did. Among the things we seized, I saw a beautiful Babylonian cloak, about 5 pounds of silver, and a bar of gold weighing over 1 pound. I wanted them so much that I took them. You will find them buried inside my tent with the silver at the bottom." So Joshua sent some men who ran to the tent and found that the condemned things really were buried there, with the silver at the bottom. They brought them out of the tent, took them to Joshua and all the Israelites and laid them down in the presence of the Lord. Joshua, along with all the people of Israel, seized Achan, the silver, the cloak, the bar of gold, together with Achan's sons and daughters, his cattle, donkeys, and sheep, his tent and everything else he owned, and they took them to Trouble Valley. And Joshua said, "Why have you brought such trouble on us? The Lord will now bring trouble on you." All the people then stoned Achan to death. They stoned and burned his family and possessions. They put a huge pile of stones over him, which is still there to this day. That is why the place is still called Trouble Valley. Then the Lord was no longer furious.
Now that's a starkly different ending than the one found in The Little Mermaid, but it's probably closer to reality than the fairy tale. Often things don't work out well when there is a blatant disobedience, which undermines the family chain of command. When you add a single-parent dynamic or a deployed parent situation to the mix, it's even harder and more stressful than it normally would be. As a teen in a military family, consider what cost there is to your disobedience within the family. Then consider what additional stability and even stress reduction you can provide for the family through your mature obedience in all situations. This is the primary role God has given you as children in a family. Honor Him and bring peace to your family. This is within your capability, and it's your role.